Hello and
Hi.
Welcome to episode 2 of My Friend Podcast with me, Paige Elkington, and you, Ruby Gaster.
Yeah.
I'm a bit congested because I caught COVID.
You did catch 19. COVID.
And somehow Ruby and I hung out pretty much every single day.
Every single day.
And she didn't get it.
It was crazy. We even made out.
We did. We did make out, and she still didn't get it. I will say I had some really strange neurological symptoms in the beginning. A lot of dissociative, depressive symptoms in the beginning, and apparently that is part of it now. So watch out.
Yes.
It was scary. I woke up with like zero serotonin in my brain. So tomorrow is Thanksgiving, a very controversial holiday.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a tough one. My family, we don't really do anything for Thanksgiving just because we don't have traditions in general. I mean, I barely go back home for Christmas, but I will be eating some food with some friends.
That's what I'll be doing.
I did just want to take a little moment to honor the incredible people that were here before us that had such knowledge and indigenous wisdom about life and the earth and natural ecosystems that we have forgotten, much to our detriment. And fun fact for you, Los Angeles is on Tongva land. That's T-O-N-G-V-A. And they're still preserving their language, which is really cool. And if you are in the mood, you should, one, look up what land you are on. There's lots of maps on Google. And we are going to put a list of organizations you can donate to if you have some extra cash and feel like you want to give back to those communities that we pretty much wiped out.
The at my friend pod.
Yeah, our Instagram is at my friend pod. Yeah, so now you get to listen to episode 2, which is Ruby and I just talking for exactly 30 minutes.
39 minutes.
39 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
About
a bunch of stuff.
A bunch of stuff. Bunch of bullshit. Just want to say, I swear to God, in the next episode, we have a guest.
It's just us with a British accent.
Yeah, it's just going to be Ruby and I and then our British persona. It's a really exciting, grandiose guest. And you guys are going to be like, whoa, wow, cool.
It's crazy.
Anyway, we love you guys. And thank you so much for listening. And stay sexy and healthy.
Always.
All right, bye.
Bye.
Are both of these recording?
3, 2, 3, 2, 1, go. Karma is my boyfriend. Karma is a god. Karma is my hair and the beans and the region.
We already have it up.
If you know, you know.
Are we going to
repeat?
Are we going to have to pay to use that?
God, who knew that in 2022 I would be such a diehard Swiftie?
Same.
I actually no idea. Only know a few songs.
I think what happened was she dropped Folklore during the pandemic and it was like.
Didn't listen.
What?
I know one song, Invisible String.
I mean, it's one of the greatest songs on the
album.
It's
one of the greatest songs.
I mean, ever made. But here's the thing. During the beginning of lockdown,
mm-hmm.
the cage in which I kept my mind was just unlocked. And I was open to anything.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, Taylor Swift, I was like, that's like what middle school girls listen to. That's not me. And then I listened to Folklore and I was like, psych. I'm obsessed.
I'm happy to say that I now understand. Let me tell you something I don't understand.
Go.
Aaron Carter.
Oh, my
God. R.I.P. Child actors, anyone who gets fame when they're young, they do not come out unscathed.
It's really sad.
Even look at the Selena Gomez documentary.
I didn't actually finish it. I actually don't think I can finish it.
It was so depressing.
It's too depressing. It puts me in a really weird headspace watching someone suffering so much.
Yeah.
And I think it's important because I think people who have experienced what she has gone through and is going through probably feel so much comfort in having that shared experience because it isn't talked about enough. Yeah. For a celebrity of her stature to come out and be like, I was diagnosed with bipolar disorder and I struggled with this, and be super open, I think is so cool, because we unfortunately only ever hear about it in cases like Aaron Carter, where it's after the fact that it's really talked about how bad their demons were and how, and it's yeah. nice to see someone who's really taken care of themselves and has like the support and the privilege to be able to take care of themselves talking about it, I think is really important. But oof, it's hard to watch.
I feel like the greater point is that there is a correlation with extreme fame and being very isolated and miserable. You look at any major pop star and they live a life with significant sadness that I think is totally valid, because your original passion or drive or ambition is so bastardized by the time you get to the top. And it's so much bigger than you. It's so much yeah. bigger than just being like, I'm a singer and I love singing. You're making hundreds of millions of dollars.
Yeah.
You are like a corporation
yeah.
that so many people are attached to.
Yeah.
You have no semblance of a normal life.
Yeah.
Everyone around you is a yes person.
Totally.
People are not honest with you. People's main objective and prerogative is to keep you on track with your schedule of working.
Yep.
You know, there's just not a lot of humanity in it.
It's really depressing to think about. And also, it's such a specific, weird goal to have, people who want to be famous. That's I'm like, what?
But when you're young and you're optimistic, oh yeah, you don't know. Like, everyone's trying to have their like 15 minutes of fame. It's like, not until you get older do you realize that it's actually like low-key a curse. Right. I mean, unless you have that sweet, sweet level of fame where it's like just enough for the perks and like not enough for it to ruin your sense of privacy. And
well, I think that's the thing. I think when you get in when you're really young, you don't care about privacy. You don't care about the permanent mark you're mm-hmm. going to leave and what's going to stay there forever and mm-hmm. just deciding to let people in. I mean, I think the Kardashians talk about it, where even Kendall and Kylie, who were so young when the TV show started, they were like 8 and 10 or something when it, I don't know exactly.
Something that I think is really interesting to dissect is how people navigate their children on social media.
Mm-hmm.
There's one end of the spectrum where they're like, my infant has an Instagram.
Right.
And then there's the other end of the spectrum of people who are like, my kid can have Instagram when they're old enough to really understand like what it
yeah,
is
and put, be like, able to be over their kids' faces.
Yeah, that side of it and yeah. be like they're conscious of what's being put out there and they mm-hmm. have some type of consent. There is no right answer, obviously, but I haven't been a parent yet, so I have no idea what I would do. I haven't actually thought about it in that way, but it is really interesting because we didn't grow up with that, right?
Right.
So like I didn't have to be like, I wish my mom wouldn't have put out that video of me when I was 4. Or
shitting
on the kitchen floor.
Classic page.
And then like eating it.
Right. I know you did do
like,
that a
I
lot
wish
when
that
you
wasn't available
kid.
For everyone to watch. Do you know what I mean? It's a
no,
kind
yeah.
of a crazy thing. It's like a new problem that only parents now and as, you know, since social media has been around or have dealt with.
Right.
And maybe it's a non-issue. I have no fucking idea.
I have no fucking idea because Instagram is such a joke to me.
I love your Instagram presence.
Your priority on Instagram is not to be hot.
Yeah.
Which is what a lot of women's number one priority is.
Yeah.
God, I want to be that girl who just like doesn't give a fuck out.
So here's the thing I do on dating apps when I have them. I post one really, really hot photo of like kind of sexy, slutty, whatever.
Yeah.
I think this is when I had Hinge.
Mm-hmm.
RIP. If a guy responds to just that photo, I won't match him. It's a test, right? I put out the one that is the least like me, which is extremely just like, I'm hot. Because it's easy, right? It's the easiest thing to be attracted to. Titties?
Yeah.
Of course.
Of course.
That's not telling me anything about him, right? Like, oh, a guy that thinks titties are hot? Sign me up. Like, no. I will post the funniest photo, the weirdest one, the one of me being strangled by Shrek.
Yeah.
If a guy is like, what's up? Then I'm like, he's probably cool,
yeah.
right? So like to me, to curate an Instagram to only be hot, for who?
It's a disservice to yourself.
It's a disservice because it's drawing in a type of person that I wouldn't even want anyway. It's even the same thing. Like I went on a date 2 days ago and I wore a turtleneck and no makeup because it was going to be chilly and we were yes. going to be outside. And that is really not attractive. But I also am like, this is me 90% of the time. So if he is like, this sucks, he's not going to like
me. But I love that about you. And do you understand that like you're in the minority when it's like an act of rebellion that you do that? I feel really? Like most girls try really hard for male attention and the male gaze. You know, if I'm going on a date with a guy, I'm the opposite. I'm like, I need to be the hottest possible. But I'm not saying that that's the smartest way to go about it.
This is also, ready, I'll completely contradict myself because I won't even say that I'm like, I don't care what guys think. What I genuinely think is that I have gone on dates where I have, and I'm in a turtleneck with like a sheen of serum on my face and wet hair.
Mm-hmm.
And fucked like the hottest dude. Because that has happened, I can't imagine putting effort into something that isn't genuinely me. I think some people also love getting dressed up. So it's not,
for me, it's a self-confidence thing. It's like,
I don't like getting dressed up. So it's like, to me, to take the extra step, I'm like, it's pointless. If I can get eaten out in a turtleneck, I'm never gonna put on a corset ever again. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. It's when I get dolled up.
You feel, or whatever, you feel better about yourself.
I feel more confident about myself in a first date. Right. The second we're comfortable with each other,
yeah.
That goes away so fast.
Totally.
But it's like that first date for whatever reason. And I just need to feel pretty. Totally superficial. It's just like one of those things that has to do more with me internally. Like I want to look really hot.
But you know what though, like, Paige, too, though? I think you are someone who, you don't ever just throw on a shitty outfit. You always look really good and put together. So yeah. I don't even think it's the same as comparing to what I'm pushing against, is because for me to dress like really sexy is so far from how I normally dress. Yeah. For you, like I'll come over to just hang out and you're in like a sexy, cute little outfit. Like that's what you wake up and put on. So I don't even think you're not being yourself by looking really sexy on a date. I think that is how you dress, which is beautiful and awesome. Like that's not me even being like, I'm a cool girl because I only wear t-shirts. Like I just am so fucking lazy and I never think to wake up and accentuate my tits.
I just find
but there's something sexy about doing that, and maybe I should.
But I find it really refreshing when women aren't performing for men, because I want to eradicate that part of myself.
Yeah.
I find it so refreshing when like a girl is so clearly not trying to be hot or like trying to make that the focal point of her existence. It's like if Imrata was posting when she didn't feel super hot. Imrata's like the hottest person in the world, but she's still trying to be hot. And like, this is no hate on Imrata. Imrata's great. That's not the point. But you get what I'm saying. It's like so much of social media for women has become, you know, thirst traps.
Yeah.
But my main focus on the internet has been being funny.
Right. Like that's, I was going to say, that to me is my being hot.
Yeah.
I also just think it's like so much easier on yourself, especially as women, where we're told that as we age, we lose our physical beauty or whatever the fuck, which is so, I hate to even say that, but it's such a thing. It's why everyone is obsessed with trying to stay young. And yeah, I'm like, myself. I think humor, you can stay funny until you die. If I'm not fuckable in 20 years, that's cool. Just, you better still fucking laugh.
You better still fucking laugh. But, you know, I guess none of it really matters
because we control what we put out anyway.
That's why the concept of a social media platform like Be Real is admirable. Mm. But at the same time, it is maybe the most dystopian of them all.
See, and I still IMO. Don't have a Be Real.
I don't either.
Yeah.
In the act of like trying to be real, you can already see how it's evolved from where it used to just be like, oh, you take a photo, you don't know when it's coming and you can't edit it. And like now people are doing Be Reals where they've did 20 retakes or they waited 3 hours to take it. And, you know, on Instagram, we all know that we're all like putting up a facade, whereas Be Real, it's like, no, we're being real, but no one's being real. Also, like, if you like it, who fucking cares? I'm not like against Be Real.
Yeah.
Someone was talking about how they were walking in Tompkins Square Park and the Be Real notification came and everyone like a robot held up their phone and they were like, whoa.
Scary. I think part of being on the internet is not being real. I have no interest in seeing quick, what are you doing right now? I'm sitting in Tompkins Square Park. I don't give a fuck. Unless you're showing me something really funny, I don't care that you're at the park. Last night or two nights ago when everyone was posting the LA sunset, I loved it. It's stunning. I need to see it. I don't need to know that you're like sitting on your roof having a tea unless there's something specific about that moment that you feel the need to share.
Yeah.
And I post constantly, but I try to have there be a point. There needs to be an incentive to post. And I think Be Real is just... I don't give a shit. I think we need to be fake. Be fake. You're on the internet.
Be fake.
Be fake. Be fake. I have friends who will they'll post their Be Real to their Instagram now, which I'm like, I don't want to see this shit. Oh, look, I'm like, what is happening? I got confused.
Please, we're on Instagram now. Please be fake.
Literally. I'm like, please, I'm on Lord, here to be fake. I'm on here to be fake. If I wanted to be real, I wouldn't be on my phone, first of all. Okay. I was noticing people were posting their Be Reels on their Instagrams, and it looks like a screenshot of a FaceTime, right? Because there's a little little image in the corner.
It's
and I was getting so confused. I'm like, everyone's posting these like FaceTime screenshots. And then I realized there was a little thing on the bottom that's like, Be Real, whatever. And I've yet to see a Be Real reposted on Instagram that it looks at all interesting or fun.
Out of all the social medias, if I could only be with one for the rest of my life, it would easily be TikTok. And that's because I feel like I learn so much on there.
Yeah.
I legitimately will learn something on there and then put it into practice like that day. But at the same time, to play devil's advocate, I saw this huge creator on there, and he then went on to say that I just don't think it's healthy for you to scroll, watch something where you're hysterically laughing, then watch something that brings you to tears,
right,
then watch like a seal with plastic around its neck get rescued. There's no way you can convince me that that's healthy.
Yeah, no way.
And I also agree with that. I'm not blind to the massive problems it's probably causing, but I'm just saying if I have to go to bed with one of the platforms, it's gonna be TikTok.
You know what? I think I'm an Instagram slut because I got TikTok a few days ago,
and I think
I've been on it like a handful of times since I've had it. I scroll a little bit, and then
Instagram has become so boring to me.
I think that's what I like, though. I think I don't want to be stimulated that much. I think I'm starting to be like, let me look at a cool picture or even a stupid picture of someone, whatever. And then I'm like, now I can put my phone down because I didn't get stuck in a hole. Like, okay, cool. I have to go do something because I've checked it all out.
Yeah,
it's all done.
Fantastic.
And I think with TikTok, I can see myself being like,
spending hours.
Oh, fuck. I'm about to start getting into assembling model rockets. I'm about one swipe away from going to Michael's Arts and Crafts.
But ironically, the next thing I want to talk to you about is something that I learned on TikTok.
Tell me right the
fuck. And it's about fertility.
Tell me right the fuck.
And as girlies in our 30s, I found it really, really comforting to know that the statistics that we use today to talk about fertility are incredibly dated, like literally statistics based on the 1700s in France.
Got it.
Are pretty much what we cite that stuff today.
To be like, your fertile time is... Yeah. Dwindling.
So those statistics that are like, oh yeah, after 35 you're fucked, are so outdated. And the few modern studies that have been done have shown quite the opposite. That there's a very little difference between your fertility levels between 27 and 35 and 35 and 39. Isn't that wild?
Wow.
Now that it's finally getting refuted, we are learning that, you can get pregnant well into your 40s and on. And I find that so comforting to know because it's really anxiety-inducing for women to be like, oh shit, after 35, if I want to have a kid, I'm really going to struggle. And like, that's what I have been taught my whole life to believe, which it could be hard for sure.
Yeah.
But it also might be extremely easy. And this TikTok
It could also be
I
hard
saw,
like when you're really young. Like you
yeah,
don't know.
Yeah. And the TikTok that I saw with these experts in the field discussing this, it was just comment after comment of people being like, I had a baby, no problem when I was 40. I had a baby, no problem when I was 39. Tons of comments like that. And also, I had more trouble getting pregnant when I was 25 than I did when I was 37. And it just goes to show that even though that's been regurgitated over and over and over again, there's really not a lot of weight or validity to it.
It is comforting because I feel like when I look at my life, what the pacing of how I want things is, I really want to fully give myself to my career.
Mm-hmm.
If it was like, hey, this is it. Your fertility goes significantly down in 5 years when you're 35, I would feel so much pressure to just pump out as much work as I can right now, probably in like an unnatural pace, or mm-hmm. put a lot of pressure on myself to succeed in a way that isn't maybe the natural healthy, trajectory yeah. of my career, just because I need to do it so that I can feel fulfilled, so that I can then have kids. It's like, yeah, holy yeah, shit. Yeah. And it's nice to know, like, if I really wanted, I could have kids in 10 years and give a decade absolutely. To my writing.
Yeah. I think women really struggle with that in their 30s. And that's one of the reasons why being in your 30s and being single is such a mind fuck.
Right.
Just been scaring the fuck out of everyone for no reason.
Also, it feels like any decision you make in your 20s, people are like, you're so young. Yeah. Like, even at 28, if I was like, this is my man forever, people would have been like, why? Why? Not even because of who he was, but just because they're like, why do that now? You have your whole life ahead of you. Like, you're a kid. Like, you're so young. At least that's how it was living in New York. But that's a
very New York and LA.
It was a very, people were like, you're a child.
In Tennessee, where I'm from.
No, of course.
Ain't nobody thinking like that. But here in LA, it's almost so relaxed that it's toxic.
Yeah.
In LA, men will truly be 55 being like, oh, dude, I think I'm ready. And it's like, bro, you're about to go blind.
Yeah. You're,
and yes, you've osteo,
you're about ready.
Osteoporosis.
Yeah, you need someone to be there to find your body.
You need someone to feed you.
We're so ageist. We're like, that's old. But it's really funny to have conversations with certain men, because hashtag not all men.
Hashtag not
all men. Hashtag not all men.
There's some great men out there.
There are so many. I can't wait to find them. No, like, I'll be on a date with a guy and he's like telling me about how he has like so much going on in his life and how he can't even like fathom settling down and can't imagine having a girlfriend and he's in a weird head place. And all that is very valid stuff,
sure,
right?
It's, yeah,
like,
of course.
Sure. It's actually not true. It's like, you have a job, you have goals for yourself, you maybe had a not good relationship a couple years ago, you yeah. maybe want to get a new apartment. And these are all qualities that you have, that you're putting up as like, I just have a lot going on right now. And I'm like, babe, but that is life, right? Yeah. You're doing, I have a lot going on right now. But the difference is that I'm like, I would like to have a child in the next 10 years. So I have to try to meet someone, right? Yeah. And I'm like, you might not be him. We might just fuck and never talk again. And I'm cool with that. But like, you're not even open to like maybe meeting someone that you could have a partnership
yeah.
with. That's crazy. Cause there's never going to be a time in your life that you don't have a lot going on. I would hope any guy that I'm into
has a lot going on.
I like, if, oh, your career's just starting off, good. I would be more concerned if you were like, I don't do anything nothing. All day.
Yeah.
I would be like, well, then we can never be together. That's yeah. sad. So it's like, what scenario would you be ready to be in a relationship? And I think yeah. people have this fear of,
well, I think that that's just an excuse. I mean, I don't think that's actually valid. I don't think
that's
that
what
they
I'm saying. It's
I
like
mean,
not
it's just
even
a way of someone being like, I'm trying to fuck around and I want to be selfish.
Totally.
It's either I want to be selfish or I'm ready to accommodate and compromise in some way. And you're either in one category or the other.
Yeah.
So it's not really a matter of, oh, I don't want to be in love. It's like, no, I want to like,
do whatever I want.
Do whatever I want. Like, we all need that at some point in our life, right? Like, that's not inherently unhealthy. But I think that for a prolonged period of time is unhealthy.
I just wish people
you
would
know what
say
I mean?
That. There's something so
totally.
Much more admirable when someone's
and being
like,
aware of that.
Yeah. If a guy straight up was like, listen, I just want to fuck. I don't see
do
myself.
Do you think you would actually not be turned off if a guy said that? Or you think you'd be cool with it?
Here's the thing. It takes me multiple dates to even really be even a little bit emotionally invested.
Sure.
So if someone's just being super honest up front, it doesn't really dissuade me from anything because I go into any date completely open to the potential that this might be my soulmate or this might be a one-night stand or I might hate you. It could be any of those things and I don't really care because I haven't decided in my head beforehand what this is going to be, right? It's like going into a movie that you haven't seen the trailer for where I'm like, I might love it. I might hate it. It might be scary. It might be funny. I don't know. I'm sitting and I'm going to watch and I'll know when I walk out of the theater what experience that just was, right? And that's me with dating. I think it's interesting when you go on a date and someone sets up these like random parameters of something. I'm like, oh, wow, you decided before anything exactly where this could go.
Yeah.
I did not do that.
Right.
Right. Like I've been on dates where I've been like, I think I'm going to really like this guy. And then I get in there and I'm like, he's not for me, but he's hot and he's kind of funny. So I could maybe hook up with him, but I've already put up a wall in my head after the end of the date. Like, I do not see me introducing him to my friends or letting, you know what I mean? But I'm like, let me decide, let me give him the date to decide, right?
Yeah.
And certain people, you go on a date and they're like, right up front, they say something. I would rather if I sat down and a guy being like, I just think you're really cute and I just want to have sex with you. I would maybe be like, all right, let's just like finish these drinks and and see what happens. Not that they would have to explicitly say it, but these really intentionally kind of curated whole, I've been going through some crazy mental health stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Blah, blah. I just got this new job. I'm like, spare me.
I think that even if people have those walls up, it's not set in stone. It still comes back down to, are you trying to be selfish or are you in a place where you could accommodate another person in your life?
If someone tells me, by the way, I'm not looking for anything, I won't even push that. I'm not going to be like, I'm going to convince you otherwise.
Oh, no, no, no.
And I learned this the hard way. I think just being younger and guys being really honest about not wanting anything serious. And I'm like, okay, but then I get super crushy on them and I can't stop thinking about them. So I let them string me along because I'm like, he'll change his mind. Like,
yeah, the next that's bad.
But that's like when you're 21 and you don't know. Now, if a guy says anything along the lines of like, I'm not looking for anything serious, I'm like, cool.
Believe him.
100%. Believe him. And then I get to decide in this moment, I'm like, do I want to fuck around?
Yeah.
Or is it even worth it?
But isn't that so interesting how you can go to a date and fully be like, I'm not really that into it. But if for some reason they weren't completely obsessed with you, you all of a sudden are like, I need them to, love
you. You can go from ambivalent to obsessed with a simple delayed response to a text.
And that's,
I'm like, he's whatever.
Why did God make women's heads like that?
It's really fucked up.
I don't know how to deprogram that. I don't know if it's possible. And I'm not pro playing games or anything like that, because what's beautiful is when just two people are both into each other and it's just reciprocated and then it's out the window.
Do you find the older you get, if someone shows any sort of disinterest in me, I immediately lose attraction to them in a different way, which I know is contradictive to what we were just saying. But I think it works on me a little less. The whole unattainable thing, right? Yeah. Like if I'm flirty with someone and they don't reciprocate, my instinct isn't to flirt harder or to now make them regret it. I'm like, he's not interested. Okay. And
I would never.
I don't know if I would have been like that. I think 5 years ago, if I was crushy about somebody and they seemed
disinterested.
Or just like didn't reciprocate the exact amount of intensity I was putting forth, I would be like, now I need to go even, I don't need to prove that I don't even care by being even more. It's just like, now I'm like, oh, cool. It's okay.
And if we're getting really vulnerable and personal here.
Do it.
I wasn't rejected in my 20s because I was so ego-driven. I'm sure there would have been plenty of men who would have rejected me. But it was like, if a guy like wasn't being obsessive with me, then I wouldn't even.
Once it was
safe, I wouldn't even look at him.
Yeah, you knew it was safe.
You know what I mean?
Like, there's no chance I'm going to get shot down because he's putting out so much attraction towards me.
Yeah. But I always, you know, and this goes back to abandonment issues from my childhood. I always had to have the upper hand. It was deeply rooted in this false sense, or no, maybe not false, but like a sense of security, like being like, this person would never leave me.
Right.
And there's something really nice about that. It's like, you know, I could get cancer and this person isn't going to leave me. And there's a lot of value in that.
Yeah.
But mine was driven from something like that I really had to confront and like work through.
Yeah.
And then when I was in my, you know, last serious relationship, it was very much 50-50. And that was a struggle for me. And I was like, whoa, what is my fucking deal?
Yeah.
that was a whole lesson and a moment for me to have, you know, some growth and to like do some more introspection and some self-work. And as a result of that, I was able to work through some other like really cool abandonment issue stuff. We love it.
For me, I was always the more stable person in my relationships in my 20s, where I would see how my partners could be so volatile with every other area of their life that I always saw myself as being extremely expendable. I never felt super secure in any of my relationships because I would see how quickly they could drop stuff that 1 minute they were super passionate about. I had partners where it was like, you're obsessed with this thing. And then you didn't get immediate validation.
Then you dropped it.
And so it was done. And I would start to be like, oh, that could be me, right? Like I saw how you were obsessed and passionate about this thing. And the next day you get some bad news about it. And now you're like, fuck that. I'm never doing that again. And I'm going to do this thing. And I would be like, oh,
why did you feel yourself continuing to choose that for
yourself? I think because
that feels really insane.
Yeah, it did feel insane. And I don't think I've ever stayed in a relationship that feels like it's going sour. I would see these qualities and be like, ooh, that seems unsafe. But until it directly was reflected onto me, I was like, I still really love this person. They're not treating me badly. They're not acting wishy-washy about me. But then the second they did, I would be like, okay, there it is. I was just kind of waiting for that and hoping in my young mind that it would never happen. Like, no, he'll throw away other passions and other things he loves really quickly, but not me. And then the second it was like, oh, I started to pick up on it happening, I would be like, oh, I'm out the door. But then here's something that I'm trying to work on is like communicating my feelings better in relationships, because I will clock stuff and have a little mental note of, this is a red flag. Ooh, I didn't like that he did that thing. That made me feel unsafe. That made me feel not appreciated. And then it's almost like a little cup of water, and it's like one little drop, one little drop, one little drop. And they're just little tiny drops. And then all of a sudden the cup overflows out of nowhere. And it's not even like I have a big reaction. I just one day I'm like, I'm leaving. And the other person is like, what? Blindsided. They're like, yeah. What? And I'm like,
oh, I have that.
Sorry, I just well. Like, and I can like think of a million things over the last 6 months.
But they had no idea.
They didn't know. Because yeah. I'm like non-confrontational. It's not a good thing. I take no pride in being like, I can repress my feelings really well. And then I'm like completely a different person towards them, because I have had partners be like, I feel like I don't know you anymore. And I'm like, well, yeah, because I'm not that person that I was. Like I was your partner and now I'm not. So you don't have the same access to me in the way that you did just moments ago.
I'm really grateful that I had some pretty significant relationships to work through that characteristic of mine. You know, I would say in like my last two relationships that I was like the most confrontational person ever. In a good way, not in a like aggressive, I'm a piece of sandpaper.
No, you were able to advocate for yourself.
If something bothered me, they would know.
Yeah.
The other thing that I realize is I have really high expectations of people in general.
Yeah.
Friendships, romantic relationships, very high expectations. And it would be to my detriment that I would expect people to live up to these expectations without guidance.
Right.
And I realized that giving guidance doesn't like cheapen anything. And it took a while for me to make that connection.
Yeah.
And be like, okay, I might have to break it down in a way that doesn't feel romantic.
Or, I see. That makes sense. So it's like a part of you was like, if he can intuitively know, then it must be the real deal. And if he doesn't, then maybe it's a sign that he doesn't really know me or care or something. I see. It's interesting. Exactly.
I would immediately be like, they don't love me enough.
To know that I need this thing that I never communicated I needed.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. And then realizing, well, if I come from a place of compassion and I genuinely explain what I need or how this made me feel and really like break it down and even provide examples of how I wish things would have gone.
Yeah.
That can be really helpful for someone who thinks extraordinarily differently than you.
Right.
One of the things I've always sought out in partners is brains that are different from mine.
Yeah.
Where we have the same values and we like have a lot of the same interests, but we don't think the same. I'm always fascinated by if someone can show me a different way to look at the world.
Yeah.
That is a very big turn on for me. So when you're dating someone who thinks so differently than you, there's gonna be an inherent struggle there to communicate.
Yeah.
And then when I would get to those places where I could really effectively communicate stuff and they could effectively communicate, it's like, oh my God, it was just like this little misfiring.
Yeah.
And now I see and they see. Now it's all good.
Right.
In practice, I kind of think everyone thinks the same way as me, right? Like we default to that.
Yeah.
If I have an opinion, I'm going to assume you probably feel the same way, even if we don't. But that's like a very natural thing.
I also think if you're naturally drawn towards someone, then you have to communicate at least a little bit similarly, or else there'd be no way you could connect. Yeah. But I think the more intimately you get to know someone, you see the inner workings and you're like, oh shit.
And when you're living with someone,
we do not think at all. Think about it
even just on like a best friend's
scenario.
You could be two peas in a fucking pod. And then you start living together. We've all seen friendships crumble when people start cohabitating.
Yeah.
So that's what's so interesting to me, especially when people in relationships like really hold off on like living together, which everyone has their reasons. There's no right answer. Obviously, you could never live together. I don't give a fuck, honestly, what anyone does. But I'm just saying it is interesting to me personally when people are like, yeah, we've been dating for 4 years and we've never lived together.
Unless you plan on never living together, that's a huge thing to overcome.
It's like a whole-ass thing.
Well, I always think too with traveling, right? I think if you haven't traveled with a partner, I'm talking a road trip, cheap ass road trip where you stay wherever. Like, I'm not saying you need to like fly to Paris to know if you love each other. If you haven't both left your comfort zone of your immediate physical comforts, your homes, your routines together, and watched how the other navigates that.
Yep.
Right away, you will encounter plenty of conflict.
Yeah.
I mean, we experienced, we went to Europe together.
Yeah.
Flights get canceled. People are rude. You don't know the language. Or let's say you're, even if you're doing like a little local getaway, oh my gosh, this Airbnb we rented 2 hours away.
Yeah.
They didn't leave the key where they said. And now we have to figure out how to get in. And figuring out what each other's energy is in those moments is huge, because it shows right away, this is how we will navigate hiccups in our relationship.
Totally.
You don't get to like push a button to escape, right? You have to go through it.
I think it's a great practice to go on a trip pretty early on, because there is so much truth to that. It's like if you travel relatively well together, you're probably a pretty good match.
Right.
Not that that's the only thing, but that's a great sign. If you go on a week-long trip together to Hawaii, and just even if you're like, oh, you're activity-based, I'm activity-based, but we also care about recharging and resting like some of the time, that's stuff matters,
because matters.
That's like how you live your life. If one person is only activities based and the other person's like, yo, I literally just want to lay here and read a book the whole time, you've got problems on your hands.
Yeah. And also how much one person does of the planning, right? If it's like, oh, I planned the entire itinerary, or they planned the entire itinerary and I'm just along for the ride, it's like,
cool.
Great. So point. Down the road, if we like start a family together, it's like, up to me to decide like where the kids go to school and how that and the routine and
love
the
these
scheduling,
points you're making.
Mm-hmm. Like, who plans stuff? And also, there can be valid reason if someone's like, listen, I am not great at time management, right? Like, that could be a specific skill set, or if someone has some sort of literal disability, but they're like, my brain can't factor these things. There's exceptions to everything.
Amazing. But how can you support?
Let's communicate that. And then where do you fill in the blank? Where do you fill in the little gaps where it's like, you know what? I'm better at actually coming up with a schedule, but I'm going to need for you to do. I need you to just make a couple reservations, whatever, right? We went on a really fun trip this summer, and there were so many little hiccups and roadblocks, and I feel like
best time.
It was the best time. Well, everything that could have gone wrong went wrong. I was crying at the airport in Amsterdam to my mom.
Poor soul.
My luggage never made it to Europe. So I went the entire trip without my belongings. I had to buy all
new
stuff.
And you were such a good sport about it.
Well, I was like, you know what? I can either have a really, really shitty time.
Yeah, you made that decision.
And not have my luggage, or really amazing time and not
what
have
else
my
can
luggage.
You do? It's such a privilege to be able to travel. You should always travel anytime if you're able to do it, because it teaches you so much about yourself, obviously, in the world. And like, that's not a groundbreaking observation by any means. But even at this point in my life when I
knew better about like so much stuff,
I needed to learn the hard way about a few things.
It was fun.
And when I think back to the most memorable times of my life, they are always the mishaps.
Yeah.
The stories that go along always. With the mishap.
Yeah. We did so many wild things yeah. that I look back on that I'm like, what the fuck? None of that was how we planned it. And I think doing that eventually like with a partner too, like doing those kind of trips with partners is so important, because imagine if you had done that with a dude and he didn't get his luggage and then was just screaming at the people at the airport whose fault it is not. And that's not to say that everybody handles everything really well. It's understanding. No.
Like, even if you have a moment, can they bounce back?
Yeah.
Again, not a groundbreaking observation, but attitude is everything in life. Bad things are going to happen to you.
Yeah. You are a product of your environment, and your childhood is one thing. But once you're an adult, I think you are best served to surround yourself with people who you can comfortably talk about your feelings with and who are positive people. Mm-hmm. That is so important. And I think we've talked about this even privately, where it's just like being around people who are negative is exhausting.
It's exhausting. We should put just as much effort as we do into romantic relationships in our career as we would into finding a supportive community.
Yeah.
I would argue that that is more important than both of those, because romantic partners come and go. Work success and money and that stuff comes and it goes.
It does go. Shit goes.
Shit goes. And you know, it doesn't need to be a ton of people. It can be two fucking people. It can be one really solid person.
Yeah.
It's so valuable. So knowing important. That you have someone to drive you to the hospital, knowing that you have someone who is really rooting for you.
And isn't judging.
And isn't like, judging.
Not, and competing with you.
And not
because you know what I think too is like, oh, there's competition God. And friendships, but there's also judgment where I'm like, listen.
There's so much
I want
judgment.
My friends to feel like they can tell me that they did something that they maybe regret or are ashamed of, and know that I won't be shameful towards them. It's like even like little things like when you like fuck your ex or you're talking to the ex that you shouldn't be talking to. If you have a friend that you're afraid to let know, fuck that friend. Because guess what? People slip up. We all have this idea of the perfect, I will never do this again. We all do. Everyone does the thing that you said you were never going to do again. We all do it. And it's not about not being accountable and working to better yourself, but knowing that in part of growing, you will make mistakes. And then how do you move past it? And do you have good friends that you can confide in and say, hey, guess what? I did this thing again that I said I would never do again, or this thing that I've been trying to not do, I kind of did. And I'm regretting it.
And I'm feeling like shame.
And having someone go, oh my God, dude, it's okay.
You're human.
Let's talk about it. Why did you do it? How are you feeling? How can I help? Yeah. Do you have friends like that? Because if you don't, get some. Get some right now. Because the older you get, the more you need that kind of foundation.
People you love are going to die. Divorce might happen. Things get really hard. It's just essential. And community was such a vital part of society in the olden days.
Yeah.
Many people would raise a child.
Yeah.
Villages would come together and it's like, oh, my neighbor's kid is my kid. And maybe that's like a bit of a stretch from what we were just saying, but I'm just trying to stress that like community is essential to your mental health, your quality of life. It's almost more important than, you know, where you're ranking at work, or do you have solid relationships outside of romance that are helping you and propping you up and inspiring you. But challenging, that's also important. Yeah. It's important to not be judgmental, but it's also important to have friends who push you to be your best self.
Yeah.
Okay, I cannot speak anymore.
Brov, should we call it?
I think we should call it, brov.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks for listening to another pod episode with Ruby Caster and Paige Elkington. We will be bringing on guests. It's not always going to be just Ruby and I rambling about shit. Love you guys.
Love you.
Ciao.